Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show. I'm Ben Rylan. Last night, the leading lights of Hollywood turned up to the Dolby Theatre in Los Angeles for the 91st Academy Awards ceremony. As with every year, there were shocks and surprises at who took home the awards. Best Picture went to Peter Farrelly's race relations drama Green Book, a decision that wasn't popular with everyone. And Glenn Close, the favourite for Best Actress, lost out to Olivia Colman for her performance in The Favourite. There's always a lot of criticism about the Oscars, so why do we keep on tuning in year after year? Well, to discuss that today, I'm joined in the studio by the film critics Karen Krasanovich and from The Telegraph, Tim Robey. Tim and Karen, welcome to the programmes. Where did you both watch the Oscars last night? Tim?
Apparently we were in the same room watching it at the party that they throw at the Hamyard Hotel, but we didn't actually run into each other.
I was looking for him, actually. It was the Academy, the official Academy in London, throws quite an exclusive party, I would say. They ply you with champagne, and then they ply you with espresso martinis to keep you going all night.
I mean, that sounds like a fairly dangerous combination, but an enjoyable one.
Yes, I'm paying the price today.
Oh, you look an absolute vision, Karen. You're not showing any of it at all. Now, I saw some pictures. There were, well, I won't say life-size Oscars, but they were quite a bit bigger. But it is a proper Oscars event. So as far as the pictures are concerned, you went to the Oscars.
Exactly. That's exactly right. If we'd been in L.A., that's the only way we could have done it, closer or better.
I think that's the impression they want to convey. It's for people in London who haven't been invited to the Oscars to pretend that they were there. They can just stand in the photo area and, yeah.
I prefer to think that they were working here on a film and just didn't have time.
I suspect we'll just believe it's all true. The future of the Oscars, though, as far as it is on television, because that's how most of us do have to consume the ceremony. The truth is that ratings have been going down with the Oscars for some time. Now, you were there in person. Did it feel as long as it often does on television?
It was much shorter this year. They made deliberate moves to enable that, partly by removing the host from the equation, which was slightly thrust upon them when Kevin Hart was outed as a homophobe in his tweets and then quit the job. And they didn't find anyone to replace him, and then they made a virtue of that because the host takes up quite a lot of time. So they rattled through it more quickly than usual. It was only just over 3 hours. And it did feel as though it was moving along at quite a clip.
Astonishing to consider anything that goes for just over 3 hours as short. That sounds like horrendously long to me.
Especially when it's starting at 1 a.m. British time. You know, you're into the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, you're here awake today, so well done, Tim. So, from what I understand, at last year's Oscars, we had Jimmy Kimmel. And he did a monologue that meant they didn't actually start giving away the first Oscar until about 18 minutes into the ceremony. So this one happened fairly quickly.
That's a long time. Yeah, he tweeted, actually, "I don't think I'm going to be asked back." Yeah, I mean, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, and Tina Fey stepped out and sort of said, "This is for people that read Today newspaper. They'll think there was a host." And then they kind of retreated. But that was very, very brief. And you kept seeing people coming out and people leaving. And it was actually, with a few notable exceptions, actually pretty crisp. And the people that stayed on were generally people that you wanted to listen to. So I felt it was really quite well, I don't want to say edited, but whoever was doing the stage management, I think, did a really good job.
One thing they were really considering early on was to ditch some of their categories and award them during the commercial breaks. Now, there was a bit of an outcry amongst a lot of people, particularly those who had been nominated in certain categories in the past. That decision didn't end up going forward, but, I mean, so we've tried this idea of getting rid of the host. One expects that's not going to be a common thing going forward. Is there any other way to chop any of the fat off the Oscars?
Well, the host can just do a bit less. And what the trio of ladies you just mentioned managed was just a very quick kind of 4 or 5 minute burst of banter and jokes, which were good jokes, good material. But just like keep it down to that and then move on quickly through the awards. Handing things out in commercial breaks was just doomed because you don't... This is an award ceremony for cinema. You don't relegate cinematography to the TV breaks so that you can't... What is cinema? It's cinematography. So that was... Yeah, they had to make a reversal on that decision, much as they did several months ago when they came up with this kind of half-baked idea to have the best popular film as an award. They ditched that as well. And then, of course, they ended up nominating several very popular films, including Black Panther, the year's biggest hit, and Bohemian Rhapsody, also huge. So they sort of... They just didn't need to have that idea. They didn't need to put things in commercial breaks either, because I think it worked fine. And they did hustle off some of the winners pretty quickly into their speeches.
A lot of them had spoken for longer than their 90-second allotment, making for some fairly awkward television,
I must say. There was some very awkward moments between... Like, there's and actually now almost kind of camp classic moment when the makeup guys who won for Vice are just sort of stood there on stage kind of muttering to each other, trying to remember which names to read out. And then the sound is killed on them, the camera pulls back, the lights are turned off. It's just these three people just stood there like in a Beckett play, just kind of speaking into the void, which I just find very funny to watch back.
But. Paradoxically, it's almost why you tune into the Oscars, to see moments like this every now and then. But there is an argument for wanting to make this a little bit more digestible, though, is there not? Because it is a really long slog on the television. And the ratings are going down. And I think when we talk about this, when we get into this argument, how are we going to make the Oscars quicker? Oh, we can't do that. It's meant to be about movie making. Or we can't do that. It's meant to be about the celebration of the art and so on. Yes, that's all true. But at the same time, isn't it also true that the Oscars being shown on primetime mainstream television, it's not a sure thing. If the ratings do continue going down at the rate they have gone down in recent years, at some point ABC is going to say, we don't want this anymore. Let's give this to some sort of cable network.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know what the viewing figures are for today or last night. I do know that previously they had dropped. I think they also think that the length of the ceremony is putting people off. But I also think that what they're having to do, as much as cinema is having to do, is it's having to fight all of these other battles. I would rather watch sport. I would rather watch this than watch, you know, maybe films I hadn't seen being awarded things that to actors that I don't know. And I think what they're trying to do is create these sort of, you know, quote unquote water cooler moments. And I think Olivia Colman's speech is definitely one of those, because Twitter's just loaded with her unexpected and incredibly charming and beautiful acceptance speech.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to that as one of the highlights. But in terms of finding a home for the show, if ABC Bennett, I think they may have just lost their chance to get it on Netflix, because you know, Netflix thought it had the winner in Roma for Best Picture, which did not win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be an awfully big coup for Netflix, though. If Netflix can't be on the Oscars can be on Netflix. So let's move on to whether we are on board with the host-free Oscars. Is this something that is going to stick going into the future now, Tim?
I don't think so, or at least they'll do a sort of another halfway thing again. They'll have a sort of semi-host, someone just on for the beginning, and then just to kind of get the night going, and then they disappear. I think that's the answer, because at a certain point, everyone gets very tired, and everyone watching, especially watching where we were watching, is starting to get very drunk, and just really wants to kind of get on with it and see what the final winners are. And you've got to go into the final stretch at quite
true.
A clip if you can.
I know I was pretty drunk because I woke up this morning thinking, oh wow, did I say that? Oh, that was really bad. But that's, you know,
they did manage to remove any like massive longueurs from being a roadblock in the middle. And sometimes they used to do like the, you know, the Lifetime Achievement Award would go on forever, and then there'd be some sort of humanitarian.
But they've relegated those 2 weeks before.
Exactly, that's very sensible, because that can just be almost 20 minutes of dead time.
And you also don't want to take somebody's whole career and go, hey, great, he's been working, you know, 90 years old, bye. But but I do think that the host-free Oscars. Although there was a scary, as you said, they need continuity and they need some safe hands to keep moving. I do think they did a really good job of it, kept everybody on their toes, kept the audience on their toes. And also, I think people working behind the scenes were constantly aware of the clock and of pacing and of who was out there, what was being said, and how much time was left. And I think that made for a more attractive viewing experience. I don't know what the running time was, but I think it was, did you say something like 3 hours 15,
something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And my brother had asked me in an office pool, he said, there's a bonus question if you guess how long it's run over. And I said 17 minutes. So I texted him today, I said, I think you won. But I think that's important, because if you think it's just going to be bloated and keep going, you're going to wander
out.
off. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, do you think that part of the reason that the Oscars have struggled in recent years to really maintain the allure that they've had in the past is that movie making is no longer the dominant art form that it once was. You know, it's not the 90s anymore. It's very rare for a film to come out that is such a universal thing that everyone is going to see. You know, those moments like when Titanic is out at cinemas and the question is, have you seen Titanic yet? Mm-hmm. Rather than, have you seen Titanic? Those films don't really exist anymore. The dominant art form, the universal art form, is now streaming television. Are we entering a future where we are just going to have to look at the Oscars and say, well, by the very nature of you celebrating movie making, that's not going to be as universal as it once was?
It's going to have to evolve, yeah, because I think that the Oscars is desperate every year for there to be a Titanic or a Lord of the Rings, which kind of unites audiences in a desire to watch that film walk away with all the Oscars. But that just can't happen every year. They can't really force that to happen. And it can make kind of half measures and they can give Black Panther 3 Oscars or whatever. But it's not good. It didn't take away the big prize. And I think when you've got a year where there's a lot of fragmentation between all the different films and everything's getting something, everything's getting a little bit here and there, it's not as sort of satisfying viewer experience in some ways. But also, one thing I would say in its favour is that it meant last night for an evening in which there was suspense in most of those envelopes. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that Glenn Close was going to win Best Actress. Clearly, she didn't. It wasn't foregone, you know, that Roma was going to win Best Picture. We all knew there were these possible upsets, and quite a few of them happened, which I think made for a more engaging viewing experience, even though in some of the cases, I think they chose the wrong film or the wrong performance.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people feeling that way, though, probably for various different reasons. Let's talk about Glenn Close then. Now, my feeling is that while by far Olivia Colman's acceptance speech, as we referenced earlier, was probably the highlight of the ceremony, it does feel a little bit wrong that Glenn Close didn't take away the award. And it's almost making me think that Glenn Close is going to be another one of those people like Barbara Stanwyck or like Alfred Hitchcock, who has an extraordinary Hollywood career, someone who is absolutely an icon of the big screen. And she may end up finishing her career without ever winning that big Oscar. Does that actually make the Oscars look worse than it does Glenn Close?
Well, I remember when John Wayne lost and then he won the next year. So I think that that can still happen. I think that they have, on occasion, given Oscars for previous performances. You should have got it last year, but we're going to give it to you this year. I think that she's got a lot of good acting left in her. I think the next big role she gets, she probably will win, depending on what the year is, what the competition is.
Well, they're saying she might do a film of her Broadway musical version of Sunset Boulevard.
Now, that's been in the pipeline for a long time, though.
Yeah, I've heard it's been revived now because on the back of her having had this kind of particular awards run, and, you know, she's back in the consciousness a little bit. Mm-hmm. That would be a great shot for her. I have mixed feelings about this because I do like to see justice served in a kind of career sense to actors, but I really do like it too when they win for their absolute best work. And I think she's excellent in The Wife, but I think The Wife was not a very popular film. Mm-hmm. It was the only nomination it received.
It's a very small film.
That's
right. It's a minor film. It's a minor key film in which she kind of really is the sole draw for me.
It's hard to think about that film with someone else in that role.
It is, yeah. And I think it's the best scenario is when someone wins for the absolute knockout performance of their lives, and you think, perfect, that's exactly why Julia Roberts should have an Oscar for Erin Brockovich. She'd never been better. She probably never will be better again. Exactly right. And I mean, maybe Olivia Colman will never be Oscar nominated again. This could be her one chance. And they've given her the Oscar for a phenomenal performance in The Favourite, which I think I do prefer to Glenn Close's performance. But it's a bit of a trade-off, and it was obviously a sad moment to see Glenn having to respond to not winning. She looked a little bit chagrined at first, I thought. And then Olivia made this brilliant gesture to her from the podium and said, you're my idol. I sort of kind of wish it hadn't worked out this way. And Glenn took that like an absolute champ, I thought.
Yeah, she really
I think she'll be okay. And I think the Oscars will make good with her in some way. Even if she doesn't win a competitive Oscar, they'll definitely give her one of those lifetime jobs.
Yeah, which I believe they gave to both Hitchcock and Barbara Stanwyck
and Peter O'Toole.
Yeah. It always feels as though the Academy is sort of crawling back to say, we're really, really sorry that we didn't do this. We really mucked up. I hope you'll forgive us. Here's a statue anyway. I don't know. It just doesn't feel quite right when the Academy does that.
Well, it's not like an honorable mention. I mean, you still get the statue, right?
I mean, now let's also point out that Amy Adams has now been nominated six times. When's her turn going to come? You know, obviously she's got hopefully decades of acting ahead of her, but people will be starting to count the number of times she's lost as well. And Annette Bening, I mean, you know, there are other people out there who are deserving.
Absolutely. There's always someone ready for their Oscar. Let's talk about the Best Picture win. We said in the introduction that it wasn't necessarily a popular choice. I think that's a bit of an understatement. I thought this was one of the most hated films of the awards season.
And don't mince your words, Ben. What do you mean?
To see it take away the top prize, I was utterly, utterly shocked. Karen?
Well, I told my brother, put your money on the green. It's going to win.
Really?
Yes.
What made you so sure?
Because it won the Producers Guild Awards.
So and merely a strategic choice.
Oh, gosh, yes. And a lot of older people really liked it as well. It's kind of like, oh, it's very well made. Like, and then somebody was tweeting today, was like, oh, you know, Dumb and Dumberers, you know, directors have won this. You know, like, oh, come on. Yeah, of course, because I didn't like it that much, I keep calling it Green Day.
I keep calling it Green Room.
Green Room, which is a great film.
My husband kept calling it Green Lantern, which is a bit of a worry.
Green Card. So you get the name wrong all the time. It was upsetting. It was satisfying for me because I got it right, but I wouldn't have chosen that.
No, I think a lot of people out in the real world wouldn't have chosen that. Tim, it was a fairly perplexing choice given the critical response. Now, Bohemian Rhapsody didn't exactly get amazing reviews from everyone, but it still would have been much more of a predictable choice than Green Book.
Weirdly, the bookies thought Green Book was more likely to upset than Bohemian Rhapsody. But the big difference between those two films is, in fact, that Bohemian Rhapsody was an enormous box office success, and Green Book really wasn't. It really wasn't. Everyone's kind of framing it as this kind of feel-good populist sort of sensation, which kind of swept everyone up. But it didn't do that well. It didn't do the kind of numbers that they were hoping it would, that films like Hidden Figures and The Help did recently, which are kind of similar takes on, you know, racial themes. That's the real surprise, was that Green Book managed to go all the way and jump over the final hurdle without being a big hit. And that's where people, I think, are going to be scratching their heads and wondering, how was it that it did this? I think people just had a lot of warmth towards those actors in those roles. Mahershala Ali won his second Oscar in his part.
People loved Viggo, I know that.
People love Viggo. And I just don't think there was another film that everyone united behind. Because for some of the voters, Roma would have been too arty, too slow, too distant, too black and white, and too not in English.
Try and think of Roma in color. It just blows my mind. But the Best Picture is a producer's award. And there were a lot of people up there. We looked like Octavia Spencer's one of the producers. What's she doing up there?
Feels as though they kind of roped her in just to make the film look good. It was good optics to have Octavia Spencer on the producing side. The worst moment of the night in some ways was when they went up to collect that award, and it's just a bunch of white guys collecting an award about racism being solved. That's pretty much what happened.
I love what Spike said about it. He goes, you know, every time somebody's driving somebody, I lose.
Exactly. That's brilliant. Yeah. And then he said they just switched the seat positions.
It might have made more sense to give this award to Black Panther, no? To me, that stuck out as the film that probably could unite everyone, because we are at a time when the Oscars, the Academy, doesn't really know what it's doing at the moment. We can tell because there was the Oscar So White controversy not too many years ago, and then suddenly everything changed. And, you know, this year was the year of so many decisions being made and then backtracked all at the same time. It was utter chaos. And the idea of the Oscars finally coming out and saying, look, we've made a decision, we're not so old-fashioned anymore, we understand Hollywood has changed, movie-making has changed, we are with the times, let's give an award to Black Panther, which represents so many new things, so many current things, talking points, things that are important right now, and yet it's told in the guise of a comic book movie. That might have been a real moment. Why did it escape them?
It is genuinely a breakthrough. I think if there was one, I certainly agree with you. I just think that, I think that there was strategic voting. First of all, we had the nominations, and that piqued everybody's interest. But I noticed on this is that increasingly the pressure on the Academy members, and also the new ones, is to try and say, you have this, you have that. And we said the visuals of Black Panther are the strongest element, and let's do that.
I think even though it only took three, the comparison I would make would be with Mad Max Fury Road, which had a real sweep on its hands that year and took six Oscars, the most, but then didn't win Best Picture. I think it's because they're suspicious about very, very commercial films, of which a Marvel superhero blockbuster is going to be an example, and they don't like giving Best Picture to those. It's quite rare that those sort of films go all the way to Best Picture. They like an underdog for Best Picture. They like an underdog with a human story, and this is why films like Moonlight managed to pull off its victory. They like the little film that has somehow made them feel, and that's how Green Book, I think, probably got away with its campaign. And they probably didn't listen too much to the backlash that we may have read about, and the kind of all the reservations about, you know, the family of Don Shirley not being asked for their involvement.
It's a very messy backstory behind
a lot of film. I think the more that people found out about the making of the film, the less they liked the film. In the first place, they might have regarded as quite pleasant or innocuous or, you know, relatively charming. The more they found out about it, the more they smelled a rat, perhaps. But maybe the Academy voters decided not to look into all that.
But for a film as critically disliked and unpopular amongst actual movie watchers to then go on and win Best Picture, what does that say about the actual Oscars? Does it call into question in some ways the actual purpose of the award ceremony itself? Because on one hand, you could say, well, the Oscars are just supposed to be about what Academy voters liked the best that year. You know, screw what everyone else thinks. That's fine. But at the same time, they present themselves as the best of the best. So if what they've chosen is not what everyone else is saying is the best of the best, and there's no changing anyone's mind, does that kind of mean that the Oscars are less relevant?
Well, I think assuming that the Oscars are some kind of meritocracy, you're wrong. It's a very political system, and we are voting for what Hollywood wants to show the world. And I think that there are a lot of people who are like, look, we're not so bad. And that was the whole point of Green Book.
I would add to that, I mean, there are clearly people out there who do like Green Book, and even some critics do. You know, the first wave of reviews
were
good.
What are their names?
Let's put them on a blacklist. It won the Audience Award in Toronto, which is traditionally a bellwether for winning Best Picture. It's the award that Slumdog Millionaire won and that King's Speech won. So it won the Audience Award. It was the most popular film that audiences saw in Toronto. It didn't translate to huge box office, but clearly there was an appeal there that they went for. And then I wonder if there's a reactionary element to the vote as well, in that, okay, yes, then the film came under fire heavily on Twitter and elsewhere, and like all these stories came out about how it'd be made, all these stories about the kind of character of the men involved in making it, dodgy stories on set with the director, dodgy tweets that the screenwriter sent agreeing with Donald Trump about the kind of racist views, and all this stuff. There's a lot of that being built up and built up and built up to try and kind of knock the film down. I wonder if some voters just got fed up of that backlash and just said, you know what, actually, I like the film anyway. And almost to spite the backlash, they kind of backlashed against the backlash and voted for it.
I think that's quite possible.
These cycles do happen, I think.
Yeah. But another thing, too, and I mean, no, not a spoiler alert, but I think that there were elements that weren't only racial, but there were also sexual elements that I think you think, this is good for America to see. And I think that there was that sort of little hidden Easter egg in there that you didn't know. And if it's playing to sort of white middle-class America, you know, where I'm from, then that would be an eye-opener for them.
Mm. All right, I'll stop the Green Book pylon now. I don't actually hate the film. I just do think it's this year's crash, and perhaps we should have gone for the Brokeback Mountain equivalent for this year. That is a debate for another day. Now, we were talking about what it might be like to actually be at the Oscars a bit earlier. Well, over the weekend, right here on Monocle 24, I spoke to Georgina Godwin, who, like me, has not been to the Oscars, but we also spoke to the Hollywood expert Mark Adelman. He has been to the Oscars, and his father happens to be the producer of the Golden Globes as well. Here's what he had to say.
So, Mark, this is obviously an event that you have attended. Is it long? Is it dull?
It can be tedious. It's I think what's interesting to put into perspective is that for all these shows, you know, if you're lucky enough to go to, and if certainly you're interested in Hollywood, the Oscars are a dream to go to. It really is this sort of amazing moment that culturally, certainly for basically all of my lifetime, is one of these moments that everybody stops and partakes in. So you go, and it's great. That said, you're getting ready, starting at 1 or 2 in the afternoon. You go in a car to the what's now the Kodak Theater in Hollywood. You sit in security lines for a long time. You walk a red carpet with insane security. And then the show starts at 5 o'clock. And the sun is still out. And then you've got to sit there for 3.5 hours. So, you know, you really have to love love film and love awards, because you sit there for a long time. You get hungry. You get thirsty. You may want a drink.
Do they not give you food and drink throughout?
No, not at the Oscars. The Oscars is, you know, when you're sitting there in the auditorium, you are just sitting there. You can go in the sort of concession area in the hallway. At least you used to be able to, and get a snack or something like that. And certainly a lot of people and a lot of talent you will see will have granola bars and candy, you know, that's sort of stuffed in their pockets and all of that. You know, it's different from the Golden Globes, which there's food and alcohol exponentially around you at all times.
And clearly a lot of fun as well.
It is a much more lubricated evening, yeah. And so the chemistry is different in the room, I guess, is the way I would say it.
Mark Edelman there, talking about what it's like to be at the Oscars, granola bars and all. Yes, he was actually talking about the Oscars, not being stranded on a desert island. All right, Karen and Tim, we only have a few minutes left. Let's have a quick run through some of the other winners who we haven't really talked about as much as we probably should have. Our best actor went to Rami Malek. Now, Tim, I know you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this performance or the film. I'm especially baffled by the kind of sets of people who say, oh, the film wasn't very good, but at least he was great. He really was Freddie Mercury. He just became Freddie Mercury. I just don't think he did at all. I think he's totally physically wrong in that role. He's got this kind of spindly exotic quality, which Freddie Mercury is not. Freddie Mercury is like burly, beefy.
I keep thinking he's like Tom of Finland, you're triangular.
Like a Greek builder. You know? It's a lip sync performance. It's got bad prosthetic teeth going on.
Really?
I'm not a fan of the performance. It was widely predicted, and I knew it was coming, and I'm sorry that no one upset, but I think Bradley Cooper in that category was much more deserving.
Bradley Cooper was really robbed in many, many ways.
I think so, because The Star is Born only took Best Song. And in a way, having been the front runner way months and months ago in the season, all of its chances narrowed down just to the song, and at least it won the song. But anyway, there was a sort of chunk of the evening when Rami Malek won, and when Bohemian Rhapsody won Best Editing, for goodness sake, and when Green Book won Best Original Screenplay, when I really was sent into a bit of a funk, which only Olivia Colman's victory pulled me out of, I think.
What a shock that was. I agree. I think it's because, you know, I was around when the real Freddie Mercury was. I mean, I lived a block away from him. And he's just like, come on. Yeah. Don't.
So Regina King also won for If Beale Street Could Talk. She was the first victor of the evening. That was, I was really, really happy to see that actually happen.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Also, again, almost like Glenn Close and the wife, I thought that her role was so strong.
Really strong, with such a subtle performance, though.
Very, very subtle. I have to say, I didn't love the film. It was a little too slow, a little too languid, a little too luxurious for me.
Yeah,
I wasn't in the mood. There were some great performances supporting her, but she really, really stood out. And what a wonderful acceptance speech as well.
Roma, of course, one of the big favorites to take away the top prize. I would argue mostly because of the heavy marketing behind it. Yeah. I'm not surprised that it didn't win Best Picture, but good to see that it won Best Foreign Language Film, Tim. And I think there are a lot of people back in Mexico City really celebrating the triple Oscar win for this.
Absolutely,
one.
Triple. And all three of them, Alfonso Cuarón, you know, he shot the film himself, so he won Best Cinematography and he directed the film.
Chivo obviously did help him now.
A little bit. I mean, I'm sure he got some help from his old buddy Emmanuel
Lubezki.
But yeah, it was good that Roma picked up those awards. I think most of the film-loving world would have breathed a huge sigh of relief if it had won Best Picture as well. I think that would have been an outcome we could have all happily lived with.
But $30 million spent on marketing. Was it worth it? $10 million per award.
I bet they're glad they didn't hand out cinematography during the commercial break after all.
Exactly.
Best makeup and hairstyling went to Vice. I don't think anyone's surprised by that.
Although I thought Border was really good.
Oh, really, really good. Absolutely. I saw Border in Cannes, actually. Mm. It was really, really quite shocked by the film. But also, yeah, you're right. But, you know, turning Christian Bale into Dick Cheney, anyone that can do that convincingly, I think, deserves all of the Oscars. And just quickly before we wrap up, the other big one was, of course, production design going to Black Panther. The first black woman to win for production design, Hannah Beechler, was the winner in that.
And it got
category.
Costume design as well.
Costume design as well. Yeah.
Which is
And the music.
Amazing. And music as well, which is amazing. And I mean, I'm particularly fond of good production design, and this film had a lot of variety of it. I mean, creating Wakanda and everything else is just the overwhelming design of it, the overweening design of it, I thought was multifarious and a challenge. And I loved what she said about getting support to do her job. I thought it was a wonderful speech.
Well, until next year's Oscars, that will bring us to the end of this program. Big thanks to my guests today, Karen Krasanovich and Tim Robey, and to my producer, Holly Fisher, as well. Next week, Robert Bound will be back in the chair to talk about the return of everyone's favourite fictional broadcaster, Alan Partridge. But for now, from me, Ben Ryland, thank you for listening.